Airport number 1712 with a release date of Friday, June 4th, 2010. To follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. NOAA says to be prepared for an active hurricane season. Will ham radio be ready? Also, an abandoned emergency locator transmitter triggers a search down under. A request to increase broadcast power levels in the United States is denied. Germany makes ready to again host Europe's largest amateur radio convention and some fun with QRP operation. Find out details on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1712 coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is Jim Davis, W2JKD.
Be ready for an unusually high number of tropical storms that reach hurricane levels. So says the experts at the National Weather Service. Amateur Radio Newsline Frank Haas, KB4T, is in hurricane country in Florida with more.
An active to extremely active hurricane season is expected for the Atlantic Basin this year, according to the seasonal outlook issued by NOAA's Climate Prediction Center. Across the entire region for the six-month season, which began on June 1st, NOAA is projecting a 70% probability of 14 to 23 named storms with top winds of 39 miles per hour or higher. NOAA believes that 8 to 14 of these will be hurricanes with top winds of 74 miles per hour or higher, while 3 to 7 could be major Category 3, 4, or 5 hurricanes with winds of at least 111 miles per hour. Dr. Jane Lubchenco, Ph.D., is the Undersecretary of Commerce for Oceans and Atmosphere and NOAA Administrator. She says that if this outlook holds true, this hurricane season could be one of the more active on record. This year's prediction exceeds the seasonal average of 11 named storms, 6 hurricanes, and 2 major hurricanes. As with every hurricane season, this outlook underscores the importance of having a hurricane preparedness plan in place. For hams involved in emergency response communications, it means honing their message handling skills through regular on-the-air practice sessions. Storm season reminds us how important it is to harden repeater and digital relay installations to improve survivability in a Category 4 or 5 storm. Continued operation without reliance on mains power, any form of telephone interconnect, or any form of human intervention can be critical during or after a storm. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Frank Haas, KB4T, in Holly Hill, Florida.
The NOAA's Climate Prediction Center is a division of the National Weather Service. For more on this story, please take your web browser to tinyurl.com/28PLONH. DL9KCE reports via the IARU Region 1 website that a review of a possible revision of the European Union Directive on Interference to and from Telecommunications Devices might impact on amateur radio. In Article 3, the directive contains a number of essential requirements to protect health and safety, ensure electromagnetic compatibility, and to avoid harmful interference. The way in which these essential requirements are defined in the directive is generally considered appropriate by stakeholders. However, the concept of intended use of the equipment seems to create some confusion between the essential requirements of the directive and other public interests, such as public security and freedom of communications, which is beyond the scope, but which might affect the amateur radio service in the future. There's also been some evidence suggesting that harmonized standards may sometimes be too stringent. Market surveillance campaigns have shown that a proportion of unlicensed low-power devices appear to be non-conformant with the harmonized standards. However, the recorded level of harmful interference does not seem to have been affected by this. In the end, the report on the directive says that the scope of the directive needs to be reviewed. For instance, the radio and TV receivers, which are not able to transmit by radio or cable, do not fall within the scope of the directive, while those which are able to transmit signals do. And for ham radio, it also means that any changes to the directive will have to be carefully watched. A New Zealand ham is in trouble for running his station at power levels in excess of that nation's maximum for radio amateurs. Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF, is in Auckland with the details.
Ellen Potter, ZL3II of Christchurch, has been fined the equivalent of $1,164 US dollars, ordered to pay $86 in court costs, and has had his station confiscated by the government. This after being found guilty of breaching Section 113 of the Radio Communications Act 1989 by running power in excess of 3,100 watts out of his station in a nation where 500 watts is the absolute limit. Specifically, Potter was charged in the Christchurch District Court on April 14th after being found in possession of radio transmitting equipment that was capable of operating at a significantly higher power than the amateur radio operator's general license allows. He was found guilty of transmitting outside the terms and conditions of the general user radio license for amateur radio operators. Potter might have gotten away with his illegal high-power activities a bit longer if not for one little mistake. Instead of just keeping quiet and operating, news reports say that the New Zealand's Radio Spectrum Management Agency became aware of Potter after he reportedly posted on YouTube. One showing showed his transmitter operating at the 3,100-watt level. That video has since been removed. I'm Jim Meacham, ZL2BHF in Auckland, reporting for the Amateur Radio Newsline.
This was definitely one time when it did not pay to advertise that one was violating a nation's telecommunications law. Still with news from down under, word that an old emergency locator transmitter distress beacon that was deposited in a New Zealand rubbish dump was believed responsible for a costly search and rescue deployment that proved to be a false alarm. The Taranga search and rescue was called out after aircraft flying into local airports reported receiving a signal from an emergency beacon within the greater Taranga area. The Coast Guard spent more than 2 hours sweeping the harbor trying to locate the source without success. Finally, the Rescue Coordination Center brought in specialist radio direction finding equipment which tracked the signal down to a refuse center. While a tea hunter was at the refuse site, the signal suddenly stopped. It's presumed that the beacon was disabled as garbage was being crushed at the time. According to the news reports, the beacon was likely an old 121 megahertz model. This is because it was only heard by the planes overhead and not picked up by the satellite. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline. Heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the WD9 GOE repeater serving Marissa, Illinois. Quickly to dismiss a petition from Richard F. Arsenault, dated April 13th of this year. The Arsenault petition had asked that the regulatory agency initiate a rulemaking to permit AM broadcast band stations to voluntarily implement an increase in authorized daytime operating power. In it, Arsenault said that he believed that such rule changes would mitigate degradation of daytime AM signal reception resulting from interference effects of digital computers and other computing devices. Broadband over power lines, energy-efficient fluorescent lighting with solid-state switching circuitry, and other electronic devices. Arsenault specifically proposed that the commission allow a 5-year period in which AM broadcast band stations may increase daytime operating power up to 10 times their currently authorized power without formal application to the commission. But the FCC says that's not going to happen anytime now or in the foreseeable future. In its denial letter to Arsenault, the FCC says that in MM Docket 87-267,1, the Commission took many actions, both major and minor, to transform and revitalize the AM broadcast band. It also adopted revised AM technical standards, which were designed over time to reduce interference in a station's primary coverage area. It also allowed migration of many of the highest AM interferers to an expanded AM band, which reduced existing interference and station congestion. The FCC ends its May 28th denial by stating that Arsenault's proposal is not in the public interest because it would greatly increase the potential for interference between AM stations. Also, that it would undermine the Commission's effort to improve the AM broadcast radio service. Two articles well worth reading in the June issue of Popular Communications Magazine. The first is titled, Getting Ready for Amateur Radio Field Day, and was written by none other than the noted DXer, contester, and all-around nice guy, Chip Margelli, K7JA. With an emphasis on introducing the fun of field day to all hams, Margelli tackled such things as assembling a team to put on a local field day event, choosing a venue from where to operate, deciding on what gear and antennas to use and more. In fact, Chip covers just about every aspect of setting up and operating a field day station you could possibly think of, and many items that might not ever cross your mind. Getting ready for Amateur Radio Field Day is a worthwhile read for any individual or group planning a field day operation this year or in the future. It's loaded with photos. It begins on page 10 of the magazine. And once you've finished reading Chip Margelli's Field Day item, keep going, because on the next item is an article by Police Chief Mike Berg, NAQQN. It's the story of how he introduced ham radio as a backup to an Ohio town's emergency communication system. Titled Calling for Backup, Ham Radio Enhances a Police Department's Preparedness. It's a true story of how Berg fulfilled a promise he made to himself years ago, that being if he ever found himself in a position to improve communications within the Rittman, Ohio Police Department, he'd do it. The story he tells is how this was accomplished by adding a ham radio station to the overall emergency communication system in the area while keeping amateur radio separate and distinct from the rest of the MCOM mix. In his story, Berg takes the reader from his conceiving of the idea of the station through its planning, installation, and first operation last March 24th. That's when the Silver Creek Amateur Radio Association came in to use it for a local tornado safety drill in conjunction with the National Weather Service and Skywarn out of Cleveland. You'll find this one beginning on page 18. Following a year of unusual weather events, cold water rescues, and state, county, and nationwide drills, the Sussex County Delaware Council has honored the county's ham radio community by proclaiming June 2010 as Amateur Radio Month. Council President Vance Phillips declared during the presentation in council chambers that the city owes a debt of gratitude to its amateurs. This for providing thousands of volunteer hours, protecting our citizens, and providing valuable information to various county and state agencies. Councilman Sam Wilson presented the proclamation regarding members of the Lewes Amateur Radio Society, the Natticoke Amateur Radio Club, the Sussex Amateur Radio Association, along with local amateur radio emergency services and radio amateur civil emergency services for their service. With Dayton 2010 now history, the next truly big social event will be the 61st Lake Constance Convention at Ham Radio 2010 Gathering. Now, both of these events are organized by DARC, which is Germany's National Ham Radio Society, and it'll take place from June the 25th through the 27th in the city of Friedrichshafen. They are the largest on the European continent. Mitch Wilson, DJ0QM, is a member of the DARC Executive Board. He tells us that Ham Radio 2010 is different than conventions and ham fests here in the United States.
We have a section where clubs from all over the world, mainly in Europe, but also from other parts of the world like the U.S., come in and have booths to basically meet other clubs and people from those countries and perhaps even join the club, things like that. So there's a lot of those types of activities there, a lot of international goodwill, a lot of people getting together, a lot of people meeting. And it's basically a very easygoing show. It's not; it doesn't have a high stress level. You can sit in the between the halls in this beer garden type of area and drink beer all day and talk to people if you prefer to do that. Or you can hang around the flea market, you can hang around the main booths, or go to talks, most of which are in German, but there are a few in the English language as well.
More about this exciting European ham radio gathering in English is online at the URL found in this week's printed Amateur Radio Newsline report. France is the latest nation to enter the ham radio marketplace. This with the announcement of a new TransFox software-definable radio transceiver designed and built in that nation. According to a press release from the manufacturer RFPA-RF Ham, the new radio is available in receiver-only or receiver-transmitter configuration. Its stock coverage is 1 MHz to 1100 MHz, but it can be extended beyond existing frequency ranges upon request. Because of this, the TransFox brings what RFPA calls unique software-definable radio to the VHF, UHF, and SHF bands. Other features include software-definable radio demodulation and modulation over a 50, 100, or 200 kHz baseband, compatibility with existing Windows or Linux software, in addition to specific Sigfox software, spectrum analysis, and 1 Hz tuning resolution. The first delivery of this new radio is slated for mid-July. More information on the TransFox transceiver in the French language is online at www.rfham.com. reported last week, the Wireless Institute of Australia has been celebrating its 100 years of existence since the beginning of the year. With a review of what's taken place so far, here's WIA news anchor Graham Kemp, VK4BB.
The first activity this year was the VK9A 2010 VHF-UHF microwave de-expedition to Norfolk Island in January. A team of experienced VK amateurs operated bands from 6 metres to 10 gigs. This was the first time such an expedition had been mounted on these bands from VK9 Norfolk Island. Valentine's Day saw the Centre Victoria Radio Fest at Tyneton in VK3. A radio astronomy and electronics expo was held in April, organised by the Midland Amateur Radio Club and held in the old Bendigo Fire Station, and this drew lots of non-amateurs and showed off our hobby as well as that of astronomy. A reenactment of the first wireless press message received from Britain in Australia is set to occur June 16-18. The Gippsland Gate Radio and Electronics Club will reenact this historical wireless milestone that occurred in 1921 at Kooyarrup, southeast of Melbourne. Want to know more? Full details are available on wia.org.au under the WIA Centenary Celebration section. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Graham Kemp, VK4BB of WIA News, reporting from Brisbane, Australia.
The 100th anniversary of the WIA continues through the year's end. A video celebrating 60 years of amateur radio in Israel is now available on YouTube. Hosted by 4Z1PF, the show combines historic still photos with music as a way of tracing the history of the hobby and those Israeli hams integral to its success over the past six decades. You can watch it online at tinyurl.com/2675NKP. This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website, www.arnewsline.org, and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. The ham who invented automated sound-to-light synchronization at the start of the 60s disco era and who was in part responsible for the creation of the IBM PC computer has died. Larry Levy, WA2INM, passed away after suffering what's believed to have been a massive heart attack. From the time he was an early teen, Levy had developed a fascination in radio and electronics. He received his technician class license at age 15, and like many kid hams of the day, he proceeded to build most of his own station. He loved DXing on 6 meters and soon became known as the ham to go to if assistance was needed in modifying any piece of ham radio gear. It was while attending Marlborough College in Vermont that he became fascinated with sound-controlled lighting. Using his skill developed from ham radio, WA2INM invented the first control circuitry that converted sound pulses to electricity that would control lights to the beat of the music. He then refined his circuits so that different frequencies could trigger various light colors and patterns. It was not long before he was building and selling these control units under the name of the Mind Garden. After graduating from college, Levy went into business with our producer, Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, who was then WA2HVK. The pair formed MG Electronics. Headquartered in the Sheepshead Bay Area of Brooklyn, New York, MG Electronics provided full-service audio, synchronized lighting, and high-powered sound reinforcement services to the burgeoning disco entertainment industry. They also built and installed the first-ever 15 kHz split-split 2-meter repeater in the United States. It was located in Brooklyn's Williamsburg Bank Building and operated under the call sign of WA2ZWP. When disco began to die in the early 70s, WA2INM and WA2HVK closed MG Electronics and went their own separate ways. Larry Levy found new interests in early microcomputers and was eventually a contributor to the development of the IBM personal computer. Along the way, he obtained his advanced class amateur license and eventually moved to the New York suburb of Yorktown Heights. Always a lover of show cats, Levy eventually dropped away from electronics to begin a new career as a show cat breeder. In addition to his home and office in New York, he also maintained a flat in Paris and supplied many award-winning cats at European shows. According to his his friend Victor Miller, Levy took ill at his home and was taken to a Westchester hospital in Mount Kisco. From there, he was transferred to a Westchester Medical Center where doctors planned to do either an angioplasty or a coronary bypass surgery. However, it appears that Larry passed away before either could be done. Larry Levy, WA2INM, is survived by his wife, Nicole. As we go to air, memorial services for WA2INM have not yet been announced. Turning to ham radio space-related news, the magazine New Scientist reports the latest on the interplanetary amateur radio probe Unitech 1, which fell silent soon after launch. New Scientist quotes member Naomi Kurahara, who says that the growing length of the silence has the mission team worried that the spacecraft has broken down, but says Kurahara they're still working to receive the signal from Unitech 1. For those who missed the recent online webinar called VHF Contesting, the audio is now available on the Potomac Valley Radio Club website. Writing on the VHF reflector, Les Rayburn, N1LF, says that the session was led by QST VHF columnist Gene Zimmerman, W3ZZ, lasted over an hour, and was a great introduction to the VHF contesting area. He also included some great dialogue regarding station design that would be of interest to even the most serious operators. Rayburn says that there were some online 60 attendees, including a couple of VHF operators from Europe who got up early for the webcast. You can hear it yourself at www.pvrc.org/webinar/webinars.htm. Canada's Nanaimo Amateur Radio Association will host a 24-hour special event station, V7TUB, beginning on July 24th. This to commemorate the annual running of the World Championship Bathtub Race, slated for July 25th in Nanaimo, British Columbia, Canada. Nanaimo Harbor was the scene of the first bathtub race back in 1967. It's been the home ever since as part of the Nanaimo Marine Festival. This year's festival theme will salute Canadian Naval Centennial, 1910 to 2010. The website for the World Championship Bathtub Race is www.bathtubbing.com. More information on Special Event Station VE7TUB is now online at www.ve7tub.ca. In DX, W6NWS will be in Vietnam until the 9th of June. He expects to be active as XV2W when time permits. You can QSL via his home call, direct or via the Bureau, or logbook of the world. IZ4JMA will be QRV portable SV5 from Dodekanese, operating holiday style from June the 6th through the 20th. He'll also use all modes on 80 through 10, including some digital. Please QSL as directed on the air. W6ZL arrived in Tonga last week. He reportedly skippered the SV Summer Sky from New Zealand and brought his K3 and a buddy pole antenna. He also renewed his A35KL license. No QSNs have been reported yet. Lastly, JE1WVQ will be active as ZD8J from Ascension Island, working on 80 through 10 meters, including the digital modes, through June the 8th. You can QSL via his home call sign. And finally this week, we take a look at a gathering held in the conjunction with the annual Dayton Hamvention. It's called 4 Days in May, and it's a gathering of hams who find operating with low power and simple antennas as being the most fun one can have in amateur radio. Amateur Radio Newsline's Mark Abramovich, NT3V, spent some time with one of the event's organizers.
Ken Evans, WD4U, president of the QRP Amateur Radio Club International, says more than 250 gathered for Thursday's day-long seminar on the state of QRP and the future. Why such a surge in interest?
It's not about turning down your power. It's about having fun.
Evans says the event drew people from around the world.
We have a contingent from the United Kingdom right now of about 10 amateurs. We have a guy from Barbados. We have two or three people from Australia. We have Bruno Bengali, who makes keys, him and his daughter and son-in-law from Italy. Last year, there was a guy who came over from the JRL, the Japan Amateur League.
Evans says the growing number of people doing QRP comes from the challenge of building your own radio and using it.
I think what people are finding is it's a lot of fun to take a $200 or $300 part or kit radio or homebrew radio that you build yourself and play with it, as opposed to just going out and laying down your charge card and picking up an $1,800 commercial set.
George Dobbs, G0RJV, founder of the GQRP Club in 1972, was among the attendees of this year's 4 days in May. His philosophy on being a part of QRP is, well, elementary.
One of the gifts that a hobby can do is ensure you do at least one pointless thing each day. And a QRP, there's no point to it whatsoever except to have a good time. That's all it's about.
Ron Doyle, N8VAR, is a QRPer and a scout leader here in Ohio. He says he frequently combines the two for some fun experiences, like a DX contact on just a few watts.
It has to be Scott on 5 watts on a camp out with battery power. And that was single sideband. So that was the best. And some of my Boy Scouts got to talk to him with a dipole up about 20 feet. That was a lot of fun.
Yes, that fun word keeps cropping up among the many who like QRP. It's just one part of amateur radio that makes this a community of unique and diverse interests. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mark Abramovich, NT3V, reporting for the 4 Days in May gathering in Fairborn, just outside of Dayton.
The annual 4 Days in May gathering is conducted by the QRP Amateur Radio Club International. It was held this year at the Holiday Inn in Dayton in the suburb of Fairborn, Ohio. With interest growing in QRP operations, it's no surprise that this year's 4 Days in May event drew a record crowd. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the STC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at our editor's desk, I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2010. All rights are reserved.
The thing goes nuts.
Very windy out. No, the wet has nothing to do with it. It's the moving.
Make sure that your remote desktop is not capturing the audio for Echolink.
Don't worry. After a number of times being caught by that, you don't have to worry about that for me.
Okay, just double checking. Also, FYI, at 0300, that machine's going to auto reboot.
Oh, did you change that already?
Affirmative. I set it up to auto login in the registry, and I set a scheduled task to do a shutdown with a restart at 0300.
Oh, very cool. Okay, so tomorrow we'll know if it works.
Yeah, the interesting thing we'll watch for tonight is to make sure that the Enunciator program, that it does shut down appropriately and take Echolink down with it. I didn't tell it to force stuff shut, so we'll see if it'll shut slightly.
All right. Well, let's find out if it came back alive yet. Yeah, it's alive. What are you using? I mean, you've got, it's very low audio.
It's just a standard voice dictation headset. Let me see what I can do to jack up some audio here.
Yeah, look at the meter. I mean, you should be just about banging at the end there.
No, I understand.
J2JHR Mobile is listening on frequency.
Well, I need to do something to figure out how to get more more audio out here.
All right. Well, if you go to Tools, I mean, you know where it's at. Tools, and then Adjust Sound Device. And I think what you want to adjust is recording, not playback.
2JHR.
2HR, go ahead.
That's better.
Yeah, I was going to make the same comment that maybe if you brought the mic a little bit closer, the power might come up in the virus as far as your audio quality, but it seems to have improved a little bit now. Again, this is K2JHR. We are mobile. We're in Manhattan at this time.
K2JHR, Bernie here, K2YO. Yeah, I'm pretty much eating the mic right now. What I did was just basically maxed out the recording input on Windows, and also this machine or this sound card has some kind of special boost circuit, so I just turned on the boost, which I'm peaking at the limit now. Yellow line is bouncing off the end, and blue is, call it 7/8 of the way up there.
And that is a scratch for the signal audio limits, possibly for the sound card, because it might could be either one. Hi, we'll be standing by listening to you. And this is K2JHR, our name here is Joel. We're mobile in Manhattan listening.
Okay, Joel, drive safe. Eric, you still out there?
Yeah, that sounds like destroyed the city.
I'm sorry, please repeat that.
It sounds like Distortion City, and maybe have it up a little bit too high.
Okay, backed off about 20% on the input control.
That's better. You're not clipping anymore. You could probably take it down a little bit more.
Okay, probably down another 10% on the overall scale. Just on the overall scale.
That didn't make any real noticeable change, so. Where's your idiot meter showing?
Okay, with a longer transmission here, red bar is, just millimeters away from being all the way at the top. Yellow is 7/8 of the way. Blue is 3/4 of the way. I have no idea what the difference in the yellow and the blue is, though.
Well, you can ask Jonathan what his intentions were. It sounds like you could actually... Now, you're adjusting your local thing, not the one in the repeater, right?
Yes, affirmative. I'm adjusting the Windows microphone input.
I want you to bring it down to the point where I hear it drop, and then we'll move back up again.
Okay, testing, testing, testing. This is significantly lower here.
Yes, that is significantly lower. Now start coming back up.
Okay, we're up one gradient. Wow, this scale is not linear. We're up one mark on the scale for the microphone input here.
Go to the next one.
Okay, testing, testing, testing. We're up one additional mark now.
All right, that's almost where you were before. Go one more additional mark.
Okay, we are up one additional mark. We are two marks from the top. Testing at two marks from the top.
All right, you're starting to quit, so go back to that other mark and leave it there.
Okay, three marks from the top it is. Testing, testing, testing. Just verify no clipping here. Testing, testing, testing.
Yeah, that's not too bad. Do you have, I don't know what kind of a car you use. You got the tone control or the bass boost and that sucker?
I don't know. Let me check that out. Also, there are some controls in Echolink to be able to roll off below 300 and a couple of other things.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I have those things off. Let me look.
No, I'm saying on my end I have that ability for transmitting. Now, this is a cheap Dell Optiplex. It does not have any kind of EQ ability. Let me take a look in Echolink.
Yeah, I'm looking now. I think what I have to do is I have to look over here. Hang on.
Okay, well, I don't know what these settings do. I just took it off the generic drivers and put it onto this box's specific drivers. Seemed to have about the same power level I did before.
Let's see, this is C-Wave. So, what do we got? We got C-Wave, we got, what do we got in advance? Nothing good, but the clunky stuff is turned off. What do we got here? Oops, and this property. Nope. Nothing useful. Yeah, I could stop being hello. Input-wise looks good. What you should have is a blue just about touching the yellow, and the little red line is the peak meter. What kind of microphone are you using anyway?
Hold on while I look it up.
Okie dokie. You've got quite a bit of audio there, but it's not bad. You know, I could stop being lazy, go upstairs and look at the service monitor and see how much deviation you're doing. Hey, Bernie, the repeater's about to shut itself off, and I got to go to the city tomorrow, so I'm going to call it a night.
The time is 1 a.m., 73, and good night from the WQ. L repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. WQVL repeater system.
Good night, Bernie. K2IO, K2K. Alright, have a good night. You know, see you all soon. I'll have to play with this stuff.
Tonight at 8:30, welcome to the WQ.